And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and a backhand stop by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chicho right in front, and what a stop on Eklund by Mason.
And goal number 3, Chris Mason.
We are ready. Second hour of the show. Chase Willey and D. Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Talking Predators with Chris Mason. We alternate Mace and Skillsy this year at this time slot. So put this down. You may also be aware that we talk to David Poile every Tuesday at 11:15. Elliot Friedman every Thursday at 1. So those are the things that are must-listen to. Must-listen to each week on our show. C-Mace, welcome in. What's going on?
Not much. I'm just on my way. I might cut out here. I'm just in my worst spot ever, actually, but I'm on my way to meet my bosom buddy, Harold.
Oh, we have a meeting in the AM with Hal Gill?
Well, we have the Mike Fish Clay Shoot.
Oh, the Clay Shoot. Yes, I'll be dropping by there a little bit later, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. So are you actually shooting today, Mace? Well, he did say he was in the worst spot ever, so that was
I guess he is shooting.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're making a comeback, Mace.
Okay, I was trying to speed through it, and gosh darn it, I just didn't make it in time, but I think I'm clear.
Okay, I think you're in the clear. All right, and we want to invite people in the second segment. We're going to do two segments. Mace and I will ask a couple of questions to C-Mace, D-Mace and I, that is, and then we're going to turn it over to the listeners here for some questions at 615-737-1025. Yeah, Mike Fisher's Clay Shoot is going on today to raise money for the Predators Foundation. That is good stuff. Mace, I went back and watched the Philadelphia game yesterday. I wanted to hear if the announcers knew what was going on. I think we did okay. We always try to do some self-evaluation. But one thing really jumped out to me, specifically on Saturday, the Predators did a lot of things right, but turning in possession time and shot attempts, turning them into quality, I think is the biggest issue right now. Finding a way to make a play when you do everything to set up the play. Somebody's got to make the play to turn it into what you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you want to contrast last season to this season, they were making plays. You know, everybody was making plays. The power play in a game like, you know, the last one against Philadelphia, if your power play gets one, it's a completely different story. But you're exactly right. They're not turning their offensive zone pressure and time into scoring chances, into opportunities. They're around the net. They're not getting the secondary shots. They're not getting the tips. They're not having the shots from the outside timed when the traffic is there to be able to take advantage of that traffic. So They play hard. The work ethic, to me, that's the one thing. I know it's going to turn around. The work ethic is not in question. But right now, the execution's off. And I feel like, I don't know if it's a little lack of focus or confidence, but there's just certain points in the game, offensively and defensively. I think they're making some uncharacteristic turnovers. They're giving up, you know, a lot of odd man rushes. Philadelphia game was better, but I still think that, you know, they made a couple mistakes and they end up in the back of the net. And you know, that's just the life right now for the Predators. The margin of error is so small. So I think you're spot on with the lack of execution factor. And, you know, somebody's got to step up. And, you know, there's some guys right now that, you know, had some unbelievable years last year that, you know, haven't got off to a great start. And the team needs them to kind of pick it up. And the power play is obviously one point of emphasis that they got to turn that around because that was such a weapon last year. And right now you're seeing the result of not having a great power play to start the season.
Now, what have you seen from the top six forward lines that has been good, and what do you need to see moving forward?
Well, I see, like, they're almost there. They're almost, you know, getting a scoring chance, and they're almost, you know, it's not, they're not in sync. And I don't know if it's, I feel a little bit of, little bit of doubt creeping in, just a little bit at times right now, a little overthinking maybe, you know, trying to make the right play. I think, honestly, I think the Johansson-Niederreiter combination, I really like that. I think that's been solid. Now they have to try to find out who's going to play with them. I thought Trennan had a good audition in his last game. You know, obviously whether that sticks is yet to be seen, and he's going to have to continue to play like that. So they have to find out who's going to play with Johansson and Niederreiter, because I really like what they've done. But I think that the top line, if you want to call it that, they got to start clicking. You know, much to what Willie was saying, you know, they will spend time in the offensive zone. They'll get some grade B chances, maybe some C chances, but there's just not a lot of grade A's coming out of that line, and I'd like to see that, you know, improve in a big way.
Now, what do you think of the shuffling out of the D-line?
I like that. You know, in the offseason, their plan was to try McDonough and Ekholm. You know, it was okay at times, you know, but for the most part, I don't think it was quite as dominating as they hoped for. And, you know, there's not to say that you can't go back to that at any given point if, you know, you know McDonough gets settled in and guys start figuring out their own game. But it was okay. So I don't mind the shuffle. Like, you get Ekholm on his normal side, and you kind of just throw a shake up in the lineup. I think Fabro's played pretty good, so he stays up with Yossi. But I'd still like to see more from Fabro and Carrier, who had such a great year last year, and these guys kind of tailed off at the end of the season. But I'd like to see them step up, you know, their game. And Yossi's kind of like, you know, the top guys. Analytically, he's playing incredible. The pucks aren't falling for him right now, and I think the shakeup on the back end is kind of a necessary thing at this point, just to get some shakeup and get some life into the decor.
Just to illustrate one of the things that D-Mace, you were asking about, the top six lines and just the overall scoring chances. Nashville had a huge edge in shot attempts, 77, I think, to 44 was the tally. But scoring chances, looking at Sport Logic. Overall scoring chances, 17-8 in favor of Nashville. But grade A scoring chances, Philadelphia had 3, Nashville only had 1. So that's trying to get more quality, higher grade scoring chances, I think is going to be really important. All right, C-Mace, when we come back, we're going to get the questions from the audience here. Call or text 615-737-1025. We have some from Twitter as well that I think C-Mace will be very intrigued to read. For sure. We put this out there. So, C-Mace, get where you need to go. Right now, you're out of the worst spot in the world, but you might be in the third worst spot in the world. So, let's regroup.
Here, how's that? Is that better? I could click over so it's on my speaker. I hope that's better.
Okay, I think that will be better. All right, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll get the questions from the Predator fans. Again, not too late to weigh in. 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Stay tuned. Predators are in action tomorrow night against the Blues. This is 102.5 The Game. All right, it is time to take questions for Chris Mason regarding the Nashville Predators. Got issues right now. 2-0 in Prague, 0-4-1 since. 2 home games and then a big Western road trip coming up next week. So it's time to get it in gear. It's been time. A lot of questions that people have. 615-737-1025. You can call or text. Here's one to get it started here, C-Mace. Dave in Nashville says, was last season an outlier for number 95? He's talking about Matt Duchene. So far, he's taken bad penalties. He's scored goals, but they've been meaningless goals. An empty netter and one at the end of the game that's out of reach. Looks like a guy who's been reading his press clippings. So what do you think about Matt Duchene turning it around?
Well, I think obviously, you know, it's early in the season. It's just a segment in the season, but I think there's just so many more emotions that go into the start because aspirations are so high and you're coming off that season. You made some great moves in the off season. That time will tell if it's an outlier. I don't think it is. I definitely think he's got the talent. He's always had the talent. To me, you know, with Matt Duchene, it's getting his mind right. That's the biggest key for these guys is you got to get in the right headspace. And I don't care how good you are, if you're overthinking and you get in your own head and you're essentially getting in your own way of success, and that's the biggest hurdle to get over. But right now, obviously, it's not clicking for them. They're all around it. They're getting that whatever, you know, we talked about in the first segment, the grade B's and the grade C's. But I think last year there was a certain level of confidence that they came in to the beginning of the season, or maybe not so much the confidence, but a little bit they wanted to prove everybody wrong because of the down year the year before, and they came in with a little chip on their shoulder. And then things just started to click, and then the confidence was just sky high for the rest of the year. So will he get to that total again? I don't know. He's got some scoring to do to get there, and that was an incredible year. You know, him and Phil were some of the top goal scorers in the entire league, but I've always said that Forsberg should be a perennial 40-goal scorer, and I think Matt Duchene the same. I think he's a 30-to-40-goal scorer. So will he get there? Time will tell. Obviously, the start hasn't been great, but he's definitely the production will increase. I don't know if it'll get back to that level. I'm sure everybody sure hopes it does, but that's yet to be determined. But I don't see any reason why he can't put 30 in the net.
Yeah, you're right. We had David on earlier in the week, and you can sense a little frustration from him that, you know, the guys that performed at such a high level last year, and it started early on, that they're not picking up where they left off. And you can just hear it in David's voice, and because he threw out numbers too. He didn't say players' names, but he threw out numbers like guys need to produce.
You knew he
more.
Was talking
exactly
about.
You knew exactly who he's talking about, but you can see where, you know, his thinking was, okay, these guys did great last year, should carry over to the next season, and it just hasn't happened, so he's a little frustrated by it.
You got to have your top guys play well. Let's get to a call. Mike in Gallatin is up. Mike, welcome to the show. Your question for Chris Mason.
Thanks, guys. So I think that over the last few years, the Predators have relied way too much on having their goaltenders steal wins for them. I feel like a lot of the times, especially when we're in a slump, Pekka Rinne would be the guy who would come in and he would make 40, 45 saves and would steal that win. I'm just wondering, is UC Saros, I know he had a good showing in Europe, but outside of that, he hasn't really looked like himself. And again, you can blame a lot of that on the defense, some other things like that. But with the injury he had, is he back into swings, or is that just something that you still got to kind of like get your legs back under? I know that we've had goaltenders, including yourself, teammates, who've had to come back from injuries. Is it something that just takes more time, and we just need to give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt for a little bit?
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. It's a good one. C-Mace, we got a couple of questions on the text line too. For just getting your thoughts from a technical perspective on UC Saros.
I think, you know, Juice, that's a great question there, Mike, too, by the way. He's, for whatever reason, since he's come into the league, he's always started slow. And I'm not sure what that is. I feel like it always took me. Some guys have come out of the gates just on fire, and it looked like they've been playing games all summer. I'm like, how do these guys do that? But I was somebody that needed games. I needed to get that feeling. You have to get that feeling of confidence and repetition in your game to get to a certain level. And I feel Juice is like that. I feel, for whatever reason, it's not like he's playing bad, but to Mike's point, though, he's not stealing games, and he's not, you know, the Juice that we saw the last, you know, the middle to last part of the season where he's, you know, in conversation for the Vezina Trophy. But he definitely has better, and they have relied on their goaltenders, and I guess you can, you know, the good thing is you try to build your team any way you can, and the Predators have done an unbelievable job of getting some of the highest-end goaltenders in the world to play for them. So I think Juice, you know, he's like the other guys too. He's not to his top level. You know, he's been good. He's been okay, average at times. He's had the one awesome game, but there's definitely another level to his play. And I know that he'll get there. He gets on one of those stretches. And I always say about the elite guys, and, you know, D-Mace will tell you this about any elite player, anybody can come in and play an unbelievable game, you know, or an unbelievable one or two games. But the elite guys, they can do it for the long haul. You know, Juice can get on those 20-game streaks, those 25 where, you know, he's given up one, two or less in every single game and stealing wins left and right. So I have no doubt that he will get to that level. And, you know, it's unfortunate right now that they need it even more because the goal support isn't there. But there's no doubt in my mind that he'll get to that level.
There's a lot of good questions coming in for C. Mace. We put this out on Twitter as well. Here's one that somebody tweeted to you, Mace. The hashtag or the handle here is Here's the Pitch with Brad. Have you ever had your face waxed while playing for the Blues on local cable television? Parentheses, I know the answer.
Oh, my God. Yes, I did. And I'll tell you what, as soon as they started putting that wax on my nose, I regretted it immediately. It was one of the worst experiences I've ever had in my life. God, that was awful.
And you got to please
thanks
the people, C-Mace.
Thanks for the reminder.
C-Mace is trying to please the people, man. You know, got to give them what they
trying
want.
Trying to help the team out.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'll do can. Anything. I'll do anything they
want. This one's from Shane. How hard is the actual adjustment to playing on the left-hand side or the offside for a defenseman? Can you provide some insight on what those adjustments are? Could Ekholm having to make these adjustments explain some of the trouble the pairing of McDonough and Ekholm have been having? If you've been following, yesterday in practice they have split those two for now, and so obviously that has been a challenge, Mace.
Yeah, it is, and you know, Al Gill would be one to really go into more depth in that question, but I'll tell you what, it's some of the times when you're pulling off the wall in the offensive zone, you have to reach around and use your backhand and get to the middle, and that could be an advantage as well at different points, but it's just the angles that you take, the way that you have to turn on an odd man rush, or if a guy's driving wide, you know, it's just obviously a lot more challenging. That's why you don't see a lot of guys able to do it with great success, and Ekholm has done it, you know, at times in his career, not a ton, and he's been okay, but I think the longer that you do that, you're just maybe not getting the most that you can, I think, out of Ekholm. You know, it's just everything. You're going back to the opposite corner in the defensive zone, and you pull your head up, and you're just at different angles on the ice. And that stuff matters a lot for players because you get these routines where it becomes almost automatic in a certain spot that you're on the ice, and you don't have to think about it. And I think once you have to start thinking about it, I don't know if that makes sense, then it becomes an issue because split second here or there, and all of a sudden the puck's it's a turnover. And I think we're kind of seeing that right now. With Ekholm, and again, they've had a couple really tough games, and part of that is I don't think, you know, McDonough's completely acclimated. A lot goes in off the ice when you get moved, you get your family settled, you've been on this, you know, Tampa Bay for years, you went to the Cup Finals, and just mentally getting over that hurdle, as much as you say, you're excited to be here, and this and that, there's a lot of challenges. But, I think that's why I like Hines, you know, putting Ekholm back on his right side, just to, you know, maybe when they start playing well again and, you know, they're getting some more offensive production, you can revisit that at a later point. But there's a lot of challenges that go into playing on the offside.
This one's from Kevin on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Was Chris Mason a multi-sport athlete when he was younger?
Yes, I was. I actually played football 1 year too, D-Mace, as a matter of fact.
Okay, I see Mace.
Was it Canadian three-down football?
No, it was three-down, but it was I was a D-back and a running back. Mm. But I played baseball and hockey. Every year was every winter was hockey, and then the summer was baseball.
Okay, Andy is the next one. He says, are we, you know, and this goes to the identity. Are they getting too many fighting penalties? Are they getting too many penalties in general? Is that hurting them more than it's helping them right now?
Well, the fighting penalties, I think we'll take those because they offset. And, you know, you have a tough team, and I think the intimidation factor is something that the Predators, like as you mentioned, it's part of their identity. And I think that when teams are scared and don't want to deal with, you know, the toughness of your team, I think you can get an advantage to that. But the penalties that are hurting them right now are stick penalties, lazy stick penalties where it's just, you know, you should be checking with your feet instead of reaching, you know, getting your stick up on the hands. I mean, you barely have to touch a guy's stick or by his gloves and it's a penalty. You can run a guy through the boards, but you get your stick up in the hands or you get reach. And as soon as a guy feels a stick on his skates, he's going down. Everybody does it now to draw the penalties. So to me, it's the discipline in the stick penalties. And it's, you know, it's impossible. I can't remember what game, if it was Columbus or L.A. where they just took, I don't know, it was like 8 or 9 penalties.
Yeah, that was the one game where it really, remember, they were the most penalized team in the league last year, and it was an ugly reminder last week against the Kings. But the last two games, that really hasn't been the problem. They didn't take very many penalties against Columbus. They only took one or two against the Flyers. So it's been different things, different games. But that is something that is probably the big challenge. You want to play tough. You want to have the identity. You're willing to take the fighting major. But you've got to make sure you minimize the ones that you're talking about, Mace, not moving your feet, the stick penalties, because it's very easy to pick those up if you're not moving your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's just habits and that's focus. And, you know, when you do that, you are benching your best players because Forsberg doesn't kill, Duchesne doesn't kill. You're essentially just, you're killing any chance for them to get in the rhythm of the hockey game and build momentum. So if you make a bad habit of that, you know, you're taking your best players off the ice, and you just can't win or have success if you do that consistently. Although, like you said, the last two games have been a lot better, but same result, the win call.
I get this question a lot, is what can the coach do? And Mace, you just put out the dilemma that a coach has, because, you know, I saw a funny tweet with an old video clip from Bobby Knight, and he talked about the great motivation that you have as a basketball coach is the bench, right? He says, you don't like how a guy's playing? Mm-hmm. I'll motivate you. I'll put you on the bench. It's amazing how well the guy plays if he knows he's going to the bench, if he doesn't play the right way. The problem with that is for John Hines, and I believe he had that discussion with the team. We talked to John Hines about this, C-Mace. We had, you know, he said, look, we've got to get rid of the stick fouls. It's been better since. The problem with benching guys, if it's the wrong guys, then all of a sudden you got your fourth liners playing 15 or 20 minutes and your best players are sitting on the bench and people are saying, well, why can't we score? You know, that's the dilemma. That's the balance. And you really hope that the players themselves figure it out, because if you get into that game of if you take dumb penalties, you're not playing, then who are the guys you're putting in?
Well, I honestly believe that's the way to go. I feel it's short-term pain for long-term gain. And John Hines has shown that he's done that in the past. I mean, you know, there's only so much a coach can do. That's their, you know, ace in the hole is playing time. If you say, all right, guys, all right, enough's enough. You know, if we continue to take bad penalties, you're not going to play. You know, I don't care if we, you know, if we put the fourth line out there for 20 minutes, if they're playing the right way, that's how you play on this hockey team. And then it has to, like any team, the coach only has so much control of that, and eventually it's the leadership on the hockey team inside the dressing room. The guys have to take accountability for it. You know, they know. You know, everybody knows. You know, I heard Colton Sissons talking about it after the game where they took 8 or 9 or whatever. And it's just, you can't do that. If you care about your team and you know, ultimately these guys are going out there and they're working their butts off every single night to get 2 points, well, that doesn't help you get 2 points. So I think at the end of the day, it's on the players, and the coach can only do so much. And like you said, you know, you can't sit your best players for 10 games in a row because they keep taking penalties, but you can do it for, you know, a game or a game or two and hopefully send a message. Because if I'm on the team, you know, and I'm a third or fourth liner and I hear, guys, you can't take penalties, you're going to take your ice time away, and they sit Philip Forsberg because he took 2 bad penalties, well, that tells me I better not take those penalties, because if they're going to sit Philip Forsberg, they're sure as heck going to sit me if I do that.
Yep.
So I think that's the kind of effect that can have.
Yep, and he has been willing to do that in the past, for sure. He hasn't had to do it as much in the last year or so, but I think the warning's been thrown out there. C-Mace, great stuff. Shoot 'em straight today at Mike Fisher's event, and we'll see you very soon.